AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by the 2013 Hyundai Elantra. Learn more at Hyundai.com.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 211 for September 20th of 2013. Small Buicks drive big sales. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
Peter G.
John, how are you?
I'm doing good.
It's another opening, another show.
Yeah, it is. It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
It's good to be back here.
Yeah.
I was at the Frankfurt show last week, and we can talk more about it. But we have to introduce Mark Phelan from the Detroit Free Press, who's here with us tonight.
Thank you, John.
Hey, Mark.
Good to be here.
Welcome.
Yeah, and later on in the show, we'll have Roger McCormick from Buick, and we'll get into that. But I got to tell you, I know you guys talked all about Frankfurt last week, but there was some cool stuff that I saw at the show.
Well, let's hear it, John.
Ben, you got to bring up those pictures of those sculptures that I've got, because I was wandering around in one of the back buildings on the second floor in the corner, and I stumbled across these sculptures that these people are doing in Germany using scrap metal, and the stuff is knockout good. So what you're looking at here right now is a life-size replica. Replica is not the right word, but a life-size rendering out of scrap metal of a Bugatti Atlantique. To full scale. The level of detail in it is really good. It's not as if they tried to copy everything about it, but there's no mistaking the car when you look at it. And the interior is very well done, too. So they said it took 3 men 4 months to fabricate that. And it sells for, I think she said, 59,000 euro. So that was pretty impressive. And then there's another one, too. Here's, I believe that's an Auto Union race car, you know, Silver Arrow from...
Or is that a Mercedes?
Or is it a Mercedes?
I think it might be.
And what I love about it is the driver, if you look at his face, it's actually the guy who commissioned the art to be done. So, you know, you get some money, you can have some terrific art made of yourself. And then there's one more, Ben, that this one's hilarious that's going to be coming up. It's a full-size Harley Davidson. Guy riding it, giving everybody the finger as he rides along on it. And once again, when you see the detail in his face, I mean, I'm sure all his friends can recognize him because it's the guy who commissioned this artwork to be done. And what a statement about himself. So that was pretty cool about the Frankfurt show. And then another thing that I stumbled across was this company called Mansory or Mansory. Never heard of them before. They do very high-end custom stuff, and there is actually a Mr. Mansory himself who made his money selling motor oil and caffeine drinks, like Red Bull kind of a thing. But they had some modified or customized cars on display that, Ben, if you can bring up this one, knocked me out. Because it's all carbon fiber. You can see the weave of the carbon fiber. I've never seen this done before. They dye the carbon fiber threads before they mold them. So instead of getting this black or grayish or graphite kind of weave, here you've got this brilliant red, and the effect is really electric. This isn't all that great of a shot. This is with my cell phone, you know, under the harsh lights at the auto show, but man, did it pop. I've never seen anything done like that before. And they replicate the entire body of, let's see one of the others too, Ben. Here's a Lamborghini Aventador. And they pull every body panel off. They scan it and they remold it using their technique. And I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like this before. It's just really cool. And, of course, it costs a fortune. And they say they'll only do about six of these cars, each different type that's on display here. So just a couple of things I thought I'd pass along from the Frankfurt show that really stood out for me.
Crazy.
Yeah. Finding new ways to separate rich Europeans from their money.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and then we were talking a couple of weeks ago, you know, the week before the Frankfurt show, of the new Volvo concept car, right, which I thought looked pretty good.
Yes.
And we were wondering, who designed this thing? And so I ran into Peter Horbury at the show and got the...
Who was Volvo's designer for years and, you know, very highly regarded throughout the whole industry.
Exactly right. And was working at Ford after they got rid of Volvo. And then Geely came along and wanted him. And so that's where he is right now. He no longer runs Volvo Design. There's a guy named Thomas Ingenlaff, I hope I'm saying that right, who's doing. And that's the guy who did the concept car that we were talking about.
I really like that car.
Me too. Yeah.
And they say that they can use the platform that it's based on for a whole range of vehicles up through midsize cars and even the replacement for the XC90 crossover,
smart,
which is a big vehicle.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that'll be the first vehicle I think we see that, you know, uses both the new architecture and shows what the new design chief, you know, has in mind. So that's coming next year, and that's going to be really worth waiting for.
Yeah. That's really cool. So it's sort of the K-car strategy, right?
Yeah.
One platform does it all.
Yeah.
Anyway, Horbury says...
I love the back.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah. No, I think that's extraordinarily well done. That, if that's Volvo's new design language, that they're going to do well.
Yeah, but there's a battle internally that we talked about when you were gone. That, you know, the Chinese overlords want to go, you know, up market fast, and other people are saying, you know, you gotta kind of
earn your stripes.
Yeah, you gotta kind of walk before you run. And reminds me of the debate within Hyundai 10 years ago when a lot of American leaders got jettisoned because they weren't buying into the program. So we'll see what happens with that.
Mm-hmm. So Horbury is opening a design studio for Geely in Sweden, and that's where he's going to spend most of his time. He still goes to China a lot.
And he's still got a house here in the Detroit area, as I recall.
Just sold.
Oh, did he?
Just sold. Yeah.
All right.
So,
and he had a live webcam that he had somebody put out on the Woodward Dream Cruise for him 1 year when he was in China. I mean, no, he loved this area. Good for him.
Show, and he's an avid follower of After Hours, too. So
it's Autoline in the morning for him, probably.
Yeah, that's before hours. So, yeah, it was kind of cool to run into him. But I got to tell you, to me, the talk of the Frankfurt show was autonomous technology. Everybody was running out to say, oh, yeah, we got that, too. Yeah, sure, we've been working on it for years. Nothing surprises us. Everybody's pretending like, oh, yeah, they're totally in on this autonomous stuff. So I found that very interesting.
Well, everybody that I've spoken to here, the company line at every company seems to be, oh, technically we're there. We're just waiting for the regulatory environment and for drivers to be ready to accept that. Did anybody in Europe have something that was a little bit more sort of real-world timeline-y to talk about?
Well, you know, everybody was set on edge when Carlos Ghosn came out and said Nissan's going to have autonomous cars in 2020. But now what everyone's realizing is, define autonomous, you know, because there's autonomous like Google has, where you get in the car and say, take me to work, and it, you know, it does. And then there's, you know, the cruise control that is adaptive and does some steering. That's semi-autonomous. That's here. That's now. Yeah. And Mercedes is bragging, you know, they're there with it. And everybody else says, oh, yeah, our cars are going to be there with it. But here's my prediction. The green thing's over as far as car shows go, because for the last decade, every single car show I've gone to in the world has bragged that it is the greenest car show that has ever been, and I think it's run its course. I think now everyone's going to brag about how they are the autonomous car show of the world.
Oh, excellent.
That's my prediction here.
Well, it's just really depressing.
I hear people say that, and I couldn't disagree more. I mean, the idea of having a personal rail car that comes to my house, plays my music, takes me where I want to go, I can read the newspaper, I can read a book, I can take a nap. I love that idea, and I think most people will.
I get all that. I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's not the driving is a participatory function. Mm-hmm. The minute it doesn't become that, then, you know, I think we're going down a path of uncharted territory. Now, I buy into all of it in the urban centers. You know, if you pull into a certain point on the outskirts, you press the lock in and you're
on autopilot.
You're on autopilot and you go to a parking structure near your restaurant in Manhattan, it's all good. As long as there's a lane for the outsiders, the ones who still drive, I'll be fine.
I agree. I think how
there
do driven cars and autonomous cars coexist?
Urban centers?
That's the question.
Urban centers, I can see it, but there has to be...
Or in the middle of Kansas.
Well, I mean,
somebody else can do the driving for me there.
Yeah, outside the urban centers, I mean, you got to steer and brake and know what you're doing, you know. Thank goodness. I hope that's always...
Well, I think we're going to transition into all this. I think there will be a lot of people who will never give up driving, some who will give it up instantly, others who won't trust the technology but will come to trust it. So it's going to take several decades for this to permeate to the point where it's common.
How did you like the production version of the i8 in the flesh, the BMW?
It's very dramatic. It's a BMW.
Yeah.
You know, the i3 is this little urban car that, boy, God help them, I hope BMW enthusiasts aspire to it. I don't see it.
It's like they took the afternoon off when they did the i3, you know. It's just, it kind of looks like a BMW. Let's get back on that i8.
Put the kidney grill on it, and let's have a beer.
Now, we've talked about that before. I think the pure electric i3 is more interesting to me than the 300-pound extra weight of the onboard. Mm-hmm. Strictly urban.
Right.
You know.
Oh, like technically, it's a very interesting car. Styling-wise, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it.
It's the reason BMW never did a minivan. It's the reason they never did a minivan. Mm-hmm. It's hard to figure out how the BMW formula applies to some kinds of vehicles.
I was kind of hoping that they would do, without being retro, but a 2002-ish type thing. Because in pure electric, without the onboard thing, it's 2,700 pounds, which, you know, could be fun, lively, and a modern interpretation of the 2002 concept. Mm-hmm. Not retro or anything. But instead, they kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
The i8 looks, the i8 looked great in the flesh at the auto shows, but now they're showing it in different colors, and it looks pretty sweet.
Looks really good. I'm dying to know what the price will be.
$136,000.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
In the U.S.
Okay.
And that's less than you expected, isn't it? I was pleasantly surprised.
No, I think they're in danger because the Teslas are going out the door at $110,000, and that's one hot car.
Good point.
Technically, it's a brilliant car.
But, it is. I'll agree with all that, but it's BMW.
It is BMW.
And it's
global, and they got the network to distribute it.
They have the network to distribute it, and, you know, I think they're going to win that battle. I mean,
that'll be interesting.
It's a loaded, it's the price of a loaded.
That's a great point, Peter, because up to now, Tesla really hasn't had any competition, not in that space. You know, the Leaf and Volt, no.
Not with that brand.
But the i8 is going to be definitely a...
Yeah, and, you know, it's the price of a loaded 911 Carrera S.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, one other thing, getting back to autonomy for a moment. You know, the fully autonomous cars like the Google car have what I call the spinning doohickey on the roof. That's a LIDAR system, a laser radar system. Those are like hand-built units to military specs. They're $70,000 a piece. Okay, but Valeo showed its LIDAR system that's not as capable as the spinning one, but awfully damn good. That'll probably come in at about $250. So that's how fast this technology is progressing.
Oh, I believe 2020. I don't know how what the scope of it or how many.
Mm-hmm. And the regulatory environment.
Yes. Yeah, that's the big... Yeah. Oh, here's the picture of the Vallejo one. And as you can see, it's like, you know, 4 cigarette cartons big.
Yeah.
And so you can package that right in the grill, the bumper. You could probably in time even
and
get it behind the windshield.
Be up on the roof?
Doesn't have to be.
Interesting.
No. It has, if I remember the stats right, 150 degrees of vision in front of it going out for 150 meters to an accuracy of 1/4 of a degree. So pretty good cape for the automatic cruise control that does the steering. Absolutely, this $250 LiDAR can do that. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And that's what they're telling me is the price. So who knows what it could really go down to.
What else? You want to talk about motorsports? You got some else?
Yeah, let's talk motorsports, because some big news this week.
Yeah. Well, Juan Pablo Montoya and Chip Ganassi are parting ways after his, I don't know, 6-year stretch in NASCAR. You know, Montoya's Formula One and IndyCar won the Indy 500 as a rookie. I think he's a tremendous talent. For some reason, it didn't...
Hasn't clicked in NASCAR.
Didn't click in NASCAR. I mean, he did win a road race, and he's run really well. But it'll be interesting because, you know, IndyCar has changed somewhat, and he's already in a severe workout regimen because he got a little punch. You can in NASCAR because...
Yeah. The driver's such a small percentage of the overall weight of the car.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting because I think he's still blistering fast. And
Well, he showed that in, Daytona 24 Hours this year.
Oh, yeah,
he did a bang-up job.
So that'll be interesting, and I actually think this will be... Next year will be Helio Castroneves' last year if he doesn't...
Produce.
End it this year. No, I mean, if he wins a championship this year, I mean... I don't think he's going to drive more than, at least not for Roger, for another year or so.
So what do you make of the move of leaving Ganassi to go to Penske for Montoya?
Well, you know, Roger and Chip are friendly, you know, and Roger talked to Chip before the move, the offers made, just say, is this cool? And Chip was fine. You know, it's just interesting. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting. It'll liven up the IndyCar grids, though. I will guarantee you that.
Yeah.
I think Juan will be right in the first two rows.
Well, it's interesting to see Penske back to 3 cars.
Well, that's why I'm wondering out loud if Helio's going to be much after next year. I think Helio's going to have to hang it up. Big news today, and I knew this was going to happen. Napa Auto Parts told Michael Waltrip Racing that they were done at the end of the season. And this is after just signing a 3-year deal because of the thing.
Explain that a bit for anybody who hasn't heard this.
Well, in Richmond, they the team... Clint Bowyer spun his car to throw one caution and to get Martin Truex in the field, and it was blatant. And then this age of video, video and audio recording of the spotters. I mean, it was a huge, huge negative for NASCAR. It's probably the most negative week NASCAR's had. And I wrote a comment about it. I said this is going to have ramifications with the sponsors and the manufacturers, and I got readers, oh, you don't know what you're saying, nothing's going to happen. Well, bang, here we are. Now, not only did they lose a sponsor, but Napa was a primary sponsor, and in NASCAR, that means they're on the car for the entire schedule, 36 races. That's about $15 million. There's 9 races left. The likelihood of Michael Waltrip Racing being able to land a big sponsor to take that over next year is not really good.
Really? Wow.
Do you think that it was, you know, moral outrage, or were they looking for a way out because they weren't getting...
You know, that's a good question, Mark. I think there was quite a bit. They were embarrassed. There was quite a bit of moral outrage, but you don't know what their discussions were behind the scenes. Maybe they just said, you know, we have an out. You know, let's take it, maybe take our money somewhere else. I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, they were really, when it first happened and it first came out what happened and the verification, they released a very severe statement. Mm. And so this just came over the wires this afternoon, 2 o'clock.
Well, didn't the other change to the rules that, you know, NASCAR made in reaction to all of the kind of gimmicking of the results in that race, didn't that, you know, almost outlaw team orders too? I mean, you know, it sounded like they were saying you cannot call one guy into the pit to give your other car an extra
yeah.
point. Is that feasible?
I don't know if it's feasible. I mean, you know, lest we blame NASCAR too much for team orders, I mean, Formula One is the king.
Oh, they're the master.
Yeah. I mean, they literally say, they radio, pull over and let him by.
Yeah, right.
You know. Fernando is faster, Felipe.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, and I wrote about this, it throws a harsh spotlight on everything to do with NASCAR, how they conduct their business, the chase, all this, you know, it's the gimmicky nature of it. And, you know, now they're saying, no, we're all about the racing and we want our drivers to give 100% and we're not going to cotton to this anymore. But, you know, there's got, you know, I will tell you that the manufacturers had some soul searching about it too, because they didn't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like, boy, we can't have this. So, you know, NASCAR's under the gun right now, and I think they're losing nationwide. It sponsors the second tier series.
Whoa.
And, you know, tough times.
Yeah, no kidding. But let's talk about one more thing before we take a break here. I drove the Fiesta ST this week, and Mark, you drove it too. I don't know if you've been in that car yet.
I haven't been in it, but boy, I can't wait to. I'm liable to just go get one.
You know? You are. I'm telling you. That's how good it is.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, I found the Recaro seats in that particular one to be much less comfortable than in the Focus ST, which also has Recaros. But the car itself is just delightful.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect balance, I thought, of just enough power without overcoming, you know, without getting into torque steer or anything. It was so much fun.
Yeah, the Recaros are super bolstered seats. I think, too, they're an expensive option. I want to say like
$2,000.
Yeah. Right.
$1,995 right. for uncomfortable seats.
Yeah. So. Well, I didn't find them that uncomfortable.
Is that the only way you can get heated seats in it?
Heated seats and heated side view mirrors. But honestly, I'd pass on both of those. Just, I would love to drive that car with whatever the base seats are, frankly, because I thought it was just such a nicely balanced package.
I love the car. I was knocked out by it.
That's going to be, I mean, from everything from you guys and everyone I've talked to, that's going to be the word of mouth car. That car.
I believe it.
And I think a lot of younger buyers and not so young buyers are going to want it because, you know, frankly, you get a super sports car these days, I mean, you're severely limited. And that goes back to the discussion. It's almost more fun to have, you know, a four-cylinder car with really good suspension and you know, you can really wind it up and
10 tenths.
Yeah.
Yep. Sure, you can drive 10 tenths.
Drive it flat
every day.
Out all the time, yeah. So
and a great value. I mean, I think the base is 21.4. The one I drove was loaded, it was under 25. And it's a lot of fun for the money.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's the best enthusiast car at the lowest price.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so if you want to say what's the absolute best one I can get for the price, yeah. I would say Fiesta ST.
And I think Ford's thrown down a gauntlet for everybody else, too. Mm-hmm. If you've got a subcompact, what can you do to even get into the same vicinity in terms of fun and performance?
Yeah. What I like, too, is if you don't put your foot into it, it's a nice, quiet, little, easy commuter car. So, and then you get your foot right into it, and the thing opens up.
It's
always cool.
And the little facelift that the Fiesta got for this model year.
Helps it immensely.
Really good, yeah.
Helps it immensely.
It's a very good mid-cycle.
Right,
yeah.
I agree. In fact, I've driven the base Fiesta. It's a pretty good car, but the ST.
I had manual shift Fiesta when, not long after they came out. And I like the car, and you know, a lot, and everything they've done in the ST would be, you know, on my list of things.
But even the base car, they've gone through, and the suspension's better, the steering's better, et cetera, et cetera. Not a lot, I mean, but it's just they tweaked everything.
Excellent. So. Ford has gotten really good at mid-cycle updates.
Yes, they have. Yeah, they have. Hey, why don't we take a quick commercial break and get Roger McCormick up here with us. So, Ben, let's give a shout-out to our friends at Bridgestone, Firestone.
There's only one car company in America that's never made a single car. And while you won't find Firestone cars on any showroom floor, they're out there running better, faster, stronger, longer. No, we don't build cars. But make no mistake, Firestone is a car company. So whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
Whether it's on television, online, or through social media, AutoLine knows how to effectively get your marketing message to the people you want to reach. Contact Stacy Eamon today.
Roger McCormick, welcome to After Hours.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome, Roger.
So you're the product planning manager for Buick.
Product marketing.
Marketing
manager. Yeah.
And you do GMC stuff as well?
Or I do, yeah.
Or you're just very aware of it?
No, I did both of them. And, it's been a real exciting time for us, for both brands, really. We got a lot going on.
Well, Buick's on fire right now in the American market.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had three consecutive years of sales increases, in the neighborhood of about 80% if you go back to 2009 to now. And calendar year to date, we're up in, you know, at retail another 16%. So that's great, but it's really a reflection of some really great products that we've been bringing to market. It is a product-driven growth. We've refreshed basically our whole portfolio now as we bring out the new Regal this year, such that the Verano, which is a pretty new vehicle in its own right, will be the oldest vehicle in our portfolio. So there's been a lot going on, and what's really nice about it is it's product driven, and we're broadening our reach into the market. You know, coming out with some vehicles that maybe you hadn't thought of in terms of Buick in a while with a compact luxury like Verano, with a small luxury crossover like the Encore. So it's real exciting times for us. Absolutely.
The Verano has to be pleasing for you guys, because it's an impressive car, really. A nice execution. The Encore is too.
Yeah.
Except for the seats. I didn't like the seats. But I spent a week in one. That's surprising, really, for Buick.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the fact that all of a sudden Buick is the really impressive small car company is completely counterintuitive.
Yeah, when as big as a Buick just trips so nicely off the top.
I mean, we have not been in people's stream of consciousness when you think about, I'm shopping for a small car, a small crossover, and that's part of our challenge, is to let people know, get awareness of all this great stuff that we have. And the Verano and the Encore are two great examples, because you know, we paid a lot of attention to the premium execution on the inside and the outside, but at the same time, we know in that space that people still appreciate a value and good fuel economy and safety and all of that stuff. And so the idea of bringing Buick attributes of beautiful, quiet, and comfortable into new segments and segments people haven't thought of us before is gratifying. And the response to it thus far from consumers, whether it's sales, you know, sales is one thing. Obviously, we're measured on sales, so we pay a lot of attention to it. But the response from consumers, whether it's in, you know, anecdotally talking to neighbors or talking to people out at dealerships and things like that, or talking to your friends about it, you know, I mean, it you could even bring it to a real personal level when you talk about friends and you bring a car home, a LaCrosse, and they get into the new LaCrosse and they go, geez, I didn't realize that this is such a beautiful car. I didn't realize what Buick had now. And so if your biggest challenge is explaining to people or getting the word out that you've got great products, that's a pretty nice place to be. So, but at the same time, we know, you know, I mean, it just makes us work harder because we know it's all the more challenging as you go. And so we're not going to rest on that for sure. But at least it tells us we're on the right track.
You mentioned new Regal coming out. That's the one car that hasn't really worked as well as I think everybody thought it might.
Yeah.
What's the new one going to do? How are you going to get that thing really?
Yeah, that's a fair comment. I would say we've been really proud of the Regal, but in a certain configuration. If you want to think about it this way, we've really focused the Regal on its role in the portfolio. So what we did was we made the base powertrain, the 2.0-liter turbo. We've talked about four-cylinder turbos. I mean, it's a really fun car to drive, but we made the base powertrain that high-output four-cylinder turbo. So it starts at 259 horsepower and 295 pound-feet of torque. And it's a blast to drive, but that's the base condition now. And you can still get a Regal GS, which now ladders you up to hyper struts and big Brembo brakes and things like that to make it even more fun. So for us with the Regal, it was really a question of centering it on, you know, it's the sportiest expression we have at Buick. So we are beautiful, quiet, and comfortable. We pay a lot of attention to that. That's kind of our brand pillars, if I can throw some marketing speak in there, right? It's it's what you expect out of Buick, but what maybe people haven't expected of late, so you can go back in history and you would expect it, but the idea of great performance, and then you throw in the idea of that great performance coming from a high-output four-cylinder turbo with good fuel economy, then it's kind of turning things on its head. So the short answer, this long-winded answer is we focused the Regal on what it really needed to be, and that was really the sportiest expression for Buick in our portfolio. And the
so we'll see a much sportier Regal when we see the new one?
Absolutely. And so we did, along with that powertrain, we've added all-wheel drive, which a lot of people have said they really wanted. And we really love that. It's all-wheel drive with ELSD. It's a Haldex system, so it's a really nice system. And we paired that with improvements on the interior and exterior and refreshed the exterior, gave it a fresh look. And on the interior, it wasn't just a question of refreshing it. It was really simplifying it and addressing some things that maybe weren't as good as they could be. It was a little complicated on the center stack area. In other words, where all your buttons, for those who wouldn't know, but all the buttons on the radios and the HVAC, things like that, we simplified that. And really paid attention to the premiumness of the execution. So that in conjunction with the powertrain changes that I mentioned really make it a really nice refresh for us.
And you've got all-wheel drive available for 2014 on the Regal and the LaCrosse, correct?
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's exactly right. And that goes along with all-wheel drive on the Encore and the Enclave. So we've got all-wheel drive on a big portion of our portfolio.
You really see that catching on in the U.S. market, all-wheel drive?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you mentioned LaCrosse and Regal, but obviously the crossovers, you expect it. Cars, maybe not as much, and not as much from Buick in the past, but certainly with LaCrosse and Regal, we expect there's people who are shopping. It's not going to be a giant percentage, but people who are looking for all-wheel drive, we've found that's a criteria that if you don't have it, they're not going to look at your car. So it's kind of a qualifying criteria. So now you're in that consideration set for those people who really want all-wheel drive, whether it's primarily for poor weather driving, but like in the case of a Regal GS, it'll improve the performance as well, and you know, and the twisties and things like that. So. Mm.
Yeah. Can you give us any idea about what proportion of LaCrosse and Regal you think may go out with all-wheel drive?
Yeah, I mean, between 10% and 15% is probably a decent estimate. I don't know what it'll be exactly. I think the all-wheel drive system that we're bringing to market is very, very good, and we're very proud of it. So we hope it runs really high. It'll certainly be have a geographic skew, so it'll run higher in some areas like the Northeast than it will in some other parts of the country. But I think if we do our jobs right and do a good job of getting the word out, getting some, you know, what we call seats in seats or butts in seats, get people to drive it, I think it's got some legs, or it's got some upside for sure. Mm.
What do you guys charge for the all-wheel drive system?
It's kind of packaged in. You know, with some of our stuff. So just think in terms of, you know, maybe it's $1,500, but a lot of times we'll package it with other stuff you know, the way we cadence our trim levels and things like that. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. Now, you know, Subaru, of course, has done gangbusters with all-wheel
yeah.
drive.
Yeah.
And Audi's done a pretty good job of, you know, at least branding it with Quattro.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, it's interesting to hear, you know, Buick seeing sales growing in that area.
Yeah, it's seeding it in the minds of consumers, too, that they can get a great all-wheel drive performance machine, in the case of the Regal, for sure, but all-weather performance from a Buick. They might not have thought of that in the past. If you were saying to yourself, as I mentioned, kind of as a qualifying vehicle, if you're in the market and you're thinking, I need an all-wheel drive vehicle or car, you might not have thought of Buick in the past. So we want people to think of Buick in those terms. Give us a try. Give it a drive. And we think we'll convince some people to buy all-wheel drive Buicks.
So Buick's doing all these small cars, Verano, Encore. Yeah. Like, don't you need to do something at the other end of the spectrum, something really big, as a passenger car, not a crossover?
Yeah, I mean, the LaCrosse is a great example. It's kind of it is what has been in the minds of consumers as what you think of when you think of Buick. And we've just come out with the new LaCrosse here. And it's hitting the market as we speak, kind of thing. And the idea with that one is really to focus on the core attributes of that Buick delivers, so that, you know, beautiful, elegant exterior. And by the way, the exterior was I think it was in where it was in its life cycle, still looked very new. So it was a question of refreshing that and making it even better. But making it beautiful, and then just paying a lot of attention to making it as quiet and as comfortable and refined as possible. We've added a lot of technology as we bring out the new cars and crossovers. But the Regal and the LaCrosse, when you think about safety technology, you're talking about autonomous cars. It's not to that extent. But when you talk about the safety, if you just kind of go around the car, front collision alert, you've got side blind zone alert, lane change alert that points 230 feet down the road will tell you if a car is going to, you know, show up quickly in your blind spot, you know, blind zone alert. You've got rear cross traffic alert, and then obviously, you know, rear vision cameras and things like that. So just a ton of safety technology. So the idea of technology, bringing it front and center on Buicks as we bring out new vehicles was important to us. And you've seen, I think you're familiar with IntelliLink, so our infotainment system, our connected infotainment system in the car, so bringing out technology, et cetera. So, you know, your question about, you know, paying attention to the upper end, the Enclave and LaCrosse do a great job of that. Other than that, they're, you know, things we think about on a daily basis.
Yeah. Didn't you just freshen the Enclave?
Yeah, we did. Absolutely. We at the tail end of last year, so
right.
in November, really we started getting cars in volume and dealerships into this year. A similar amount of change on the Enclave that we're bringing to market with the LaCrosse and the Regal, in terms of, you know, the Enclave is a great example of that. Was by many measures, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but by many measures, a great success for us. I think the best execution of a three-row crossover in the market. And
it was the first vehicle that sort of launched the ship of the redefinition of Buick 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the term renaissance is often thrown around, and maybe too much so. But really, if you want to think of the product renaissance of current time at Buick, it started there. But then that was the first of our second generation of the renaissance, if you will. And that was really, really kicked in early this year, and so far it's been going really great. Again, it was, the input we'd get is, so what's your objective with this? It's like, don't screw it up, because it's been really, really good. So we did some things to make it look even more contemporary, more progressive, and then spent a lot of time on the interior to even take that up a notch in terms of the refinement of the materials that we used, et cetera. So the Enclave was a great example of, I think, of doing the right amount of change with a successful entry.
You've had pretty good growth in sales, particularly, you know, this year, but you were also moving into new segments that you weren't in. as we look at it now, for at least the immediate foreseeable future, you're in where you are is where you are. Can Buick expect more significant growth next year, staying in the same segments that it's in, even with updates of some of the existing vehicles?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think part of our challenge is awareness, right, of what we have on the market. We know that when you ask a large segment of folks, and a lot of times it breaks down by age, but you say, what do you know or what do you think about Buick? It is often based on what they know from the past, and there is not as much familiarity with the great cars and crossovers that we're bringing to market today. So that said, I think the growth is really, okay, we brought out new products and stuff we're really proud of, and now the challenge is getting an awareness out there, getting people to try us. I think that'll feed the growth, right? We've done it with the product, a great product offensive, if you will, and now it's really to get the word out in a lot of ways. I mean, we know we've done some research on the auto show environment or some of the promotional events we do, and we know when we give people a chance to spend time in our cars, because of that maybe lack of awareness of the stuff we have today, when we get people to spend time, we change opinion dramatically, and it sticks with people. In other words, they spend time in the car, and they have, many times you see the aha moment where, geez, I didn't realize Buick made such great stuff. And then you ask them, pre and post events, what do you think of Buick? And their opinion has gone up dramatically via exposure to the car, which is a great thing, right? It's not smoke and mirrors. It is exposure to great vehicles, great cars and crossovers. And so for us, that's the challenge. And so we want to get as many people into seats to give us a try, take test drives and do things like that. And we think once we do that, we feel confident enough about the cars that we'll bring new people into the family. And that's what Encore and Verano have done for us. Bring the other cars as well, as we brought new versions. But the Encore and the Verano bringing new people into Buick, into the family. And, the way I often have thought about it is you can now envision a Buick garage, where in the past, or in the recent past, you couldn't envision a full garage with a family at different life stages. Maybe the kid has the Encore and the family has an Enclave, or a Verano and a Cross, or a Verano and an Enclave and a garage. So you can, to me, it builds consumer loyalty, over time when you have things that meet the life stage of people as the change.
And with that, why don't we take a quick commercial break here and we'll get to some of the audience's questions. So, Ben, let's give a shout out to our friends at Hyundai.
What's my type? Well, they have to be smart, a good sense of direction, good taste in music, and, of course, good looks with nice curves. That gets my temperature rising every time we touch. And that exotic name, Elantra. Wait, are we talking about cars?
Okay, we're back. This is the rapid fire part of the show where we get to the audience questions. And Ben, let it rip. Okay, Roger, we got a whole bunch of questions coming in all about Buick. And Alexander says, I heard a report that Buick is going to have a different design language than Opel. Is that true?
Well, I think we've got a pretty firmly established design language right now. And, I mean, it's characterized by, elegance and flowing body sides and things like that. And if you think about a great example of that, I think is the Enclave. So if you think of three-row crossover and the idea you can make it look elegant, tells you got a pretty good design character. But that doesn't.
Yeah,
mean,
but when I was in Germany and I see the Mocha, I go, oh, the Buick Encore. Oh yeah. No, it's the Opel Mocha. So yeah. I mean, the badging's the only difference in those kinds of vehicles.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's where the question's getting. Will Buick really be separate from Opel even?
Well, I think there's a lot of similarities today that you just mentioned, right? There's great examples today that design language works really well for both brands, right? The Regal Insignia is another example of that. You know, the Encore and the Mocha you mentioned. So the idea that that design language can work for both brands, I think, is a good thing, because we've, you know, two great examples where it's worked. And I think could there be some tweaking over time that that utilizes the power of both brands? Yeah, of course there can. But I would say, yeah, I'd say very much so. We've got some proof points that, that the design language works for both brands, and I think that, that makes us feel good about things we're doing in the future.
Speaking of Opel, Scott in Cleveland wants to know, what about the possibility of making the Cascada or the Atom a Buick?
Yeah, I mean, two intriguing questions, right? I mean, and of course we've had a lot of conversation about that. I think, well, I mean, I would be curious to hear what you guys think. I mean, the Cascada is a beautiful car, for instance.
And a convertible, almost a midsize, you know, car, and a convertible.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it looks gorgeous, and again, very intriguing in terms of future product. I can't say too much about some of the stuff we're looking at, but I can say that I love the Cascada. It's a beautiful car, and, you know, could I picture it as a Buick? Yeah, sure. I mean, what do you guys think?
I can absolutely picture that as a Buick. I'm not so much sure the Atom, but the Atom is a cool car.
Yeah, yeah, no question. I mean, there are other intriguing possibilities with us trying to find synergies between with Buick and Opel that, you know, I don't know how they're going to turn out as we go forward here, but I do know that they give us a real opportunity to broaden for both brands, to broaden our reach, to broaden our portfolio, give us opportunities to look at different things that maybe you wouldn't have expected in the past. I mean, the Encore is a great example. There was some skepticism early on about the idea of a small crossover with these premium Buick luxury type attributes and qualities. And I think it's really proven out. You know, we've sold almost 20,000 to date. The people who buy them, we're getting feedback that they really love the Encore. But the idea of it wasn't an obvious one to a lot of people, but so there may be examples like that might not be obvious today sitting here that you might look at going forward.
And the Cascada, I mean, a big ritzy convertible, you know, not a little sportster pretending to be a roadster, but something that can actually carry four people. That's really consistent with Buick's history.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The idea that, you know, that you can get that beautiful, elegant design and something really fun, but you can still carry around four people. You know, we know that the Buick customer is very social. We know they're very inquisitive. We know they like to try new things, and they like to do it with other people, right? They're very much about their community, et cetera. So that the idea of a sporty, fun convertible that's beautiful and elegant, and that you can take four people in as well, a couple of couples or even a couple and a couple of kids, I think is perfect and suits Buick well.
So what was the date again? You said the new Riviera was coming?
I was warned that I might get, So I mean, the idea of working with Opel and using the power of both brands and the power of a global toolbox of engineering and design and thinking about what Buick can become and what Buick can branch out into with the idea that you got to be true to the core elements or the attributes of Buick is very intriguing. And the same thing on the Opel side. And I think working together, some of the dynamic executions at Opel might help us. The focus on quiet and comfortable and premium materials might help Opel as well. So I think the two of us together can develop two great brands and can work together and find opportunities for two great brands to excel even further. Yeah.
Okay, Will in New Haven says, in 2011, a Verano supplier map indicated the 2015 Verano would have a hybrid engine, a 2.5-liter engine, and a CVT. Are these part of a single new powertrain, or what will the powertrain choices be, he wants to know.
Yeah, I mean, I can't talk about future product, but in terms of specifics, but I can say we're looking at a lot of different possibilities for our cars, whether it's fuel-saving ideas, whether it's a better drive experience.
Do your customers come in and ask for a strong hybrid? You've got e-assist, but that's not a strong hybrid.
Yeah, but it's an intriguing. It's really an intriguing
proposition.
But do
they come in and ask for strong hybrid?
No, I haven't heard a lot of that. I mean, you mentioned e-assist. I mean, that is a very powerful offer, especially in a LaCrosse. The idea of a full-size luxury sedan that gets 36 miles per gallon and does it at a value, right? So you're not paying for a strong hybrid, if you will. So you can get into that for a beautiful luxury full-size sedan, but you get 36 miles per gallon. That seems to satisfy a lot of people, so we're really happy with that. I have not heard a ton of people coming in and saying that, but we're always looking at possibilities out into the future. Sure.
What about the possibility of e-assist on some of the vehicles where it doesn't exist now, the crossovers? Might it make sense to look at it in that class too?
Yeah, it could. Again, I mean, we look at, there's a lot of, you guys probably know better than I do, just all the different ways to bring fuel-saving technology into the vehicles. And so we're looking at all of them is the best way to say it. The e-assist has done really, really well for us. We love what it says about the brand. We love the choice that it gives people. We talked a little bit before about the Regal. The idea of you can get the 259 horsepower turbocharged four-cylinder engine, or you can get the e-assist system if your primary concern is spectacular fuel economy. You can opt for that. And if the external environment changes such that becomes a more desirable choice, then we'll see that penetration go up, for instance. So, all that stuff is exciting to think about on future cars and crossovers.
Hey, we've got a couple of phone calls coming in here. Ben, why don't we bring in one of them?
Hi, it's Ralph Johnson calling from Calgary, Canada. Just a question for your guest. I just was wondering why Buick, or maybe would Buick ever consider picking up the Sky and Solstice platform? I think Buick could have almost just picked up the Sky and rolled it right into having themselves a little roadster on their lineup. Beautiful little car, and I think the platform was fantastic. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah, I mean, no plans to do that at this point. I would say, just like many of the questions are implying, I mean, what I love about the questions is that people are seeing the possibilities for Buick and the possibilities in segments that maybe we're not in today. And that tells me that people are excited about the Buick brand, and we share that same excitement. But in terms of future stuff, we're looking again. For us, it has to be within the framework of make sure that we do things that are within the context of the brand. So that beautiful, quiet, and comfortable with, optimize the performance like on a Regal, bring great technology in. And could that apply to other segments? Well, of course it could. We just need to do that smartly over time. But we're looking at, and we feel the same excitement about what possibilities there could be with Buick going forward. But we also know we've got a great portfolio now, a portfolio that we've expanded greatly just in the last couple of years, and we feel good about that. And so with that said, I mean, we're really focusing on getting the word out about a great Verano, a great Encore. And that's a big challenge for us just today, is just to get that word out that we've got these two great, smaller, whether it's a compact or a smaller crossover, with Buick luxury attributes out there today. So that's a big challenge for us right now. So we want to do it smartly over time if there's other reach or additional reach for the brand.
Hey, we were talking about Opel earlier. Ramon Rivera Notario says he's just wondering if that new Monza concept that they showed in Frankfurt could eventually be a Buick.
I think he's got a good eye, and I think I love the look of the Monza, and I think it's a great.
Here's a picture of it, in fact, up there. The design language, that front-end graphic, I think is terrific.
I mean, you could see that design language making it into a lot of future Buicks and Opels, if you will. So, Yeah, we share the same excitement about that. Yeah.
Okay, and we got one more phone call here, too. Ben, let's bring that in.
Hey, this is Bob Z from Long Beach on the left coast. Just wondering if the higher output four-cylinder will ever be offered in the Encore. I believe it's 250 horsepower. That would be, seems to be a better match for that small SUV. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, as we look at Encore over time, there might be some things like that we can look at. But right now, the Encore we're selling, you know, we've gotten a lot of feedback that there's people are very satisfied with the ride performance, with the drive performance from people who are buying the car today, buying the crossover today. So we feel really good about that. But we're always looking to make improvements into the future. So nothing I can share specifically in terms of what that might be. But over time, like the Regal and the LaCrosse that we're bringing to market today, over time we look at improving what on what are really great cars or crossovers, and those are things we look at.
Okay, Ben, do I read this right? We've got one more phone call that could come in.
Hi, this is Jeff W. from Walden, New York. I just wanted to get the panel's thoughts on how GM has been able to hold on to its dominance in the full-size SUV market. It's even surprising that even Ford, which of course is the pickup truck king, cannot even seem to make a dent in GM's dominance. Thanks.
Great point. That's a great point.
Yep. The last I saw, they were over two-thirds of the market for the full-size and larger SUVs, and that's dominance.
74%. GMC itself, the Yukon, is about 22% of that full-size Ute market, and we feel really good about the idea. We just revealed our Yukon and a new Yukon and Tahoe and Suburban. So from GMC standpoint, Yukon and Yukon XL. And Yukon Denali, we just revealed that recently here last week, and we feel really good about the great improvements we're making to that. So that, to me, that's an example of, you know, again, not resting on your laurels. The idea that, you know, we're satisfying a lot of consumers today with a great SUV, and we've kind of brought it up a notch in terms of execution, in terms of powertrain. So that same great 5.3 liter V8 and 6.2 liter V8 that Jeff Luke was talking about in the Sierra last week, make it into the Yukon and deliver better horsepower, more torque, and better fuel economy. And then in addition, improvements on the interior and full flat third row seats and second row seats just kind of tell us, great, we got a good thing going, and let's not rest on our laurels. Let's work even harder to make it even better.
And, of course, the key reason why GM's so dominant is it's got so many models. Geez,
yes.
You know, Dodge does the Durango. Ford sure does the Expedition, full stop,
yep.
Right? The Navigator's still around, okay. But you guys got three different brands selling full-size SUVs with various models each.
Yeah. If I just look at Yukon, you can get a Yukon short wheel, basically Yukon, which is a lot of room, a lot of capability, and a really good, really great SUV. But then you get a Yukon XL if you need a little bit more room, and you spend and you got more gear, more people to haul around. And then we have Denali versions of both of that, so kind of a little bit more luxury execution, kind of the penultimate, if you will, for the Yukon. So just within the GMC portfolio, a lot of great choices for consumers. So that's one of the reasons, really good choices that they come into a showroom and they can see Yukon XL and Denali versions of that. And so I think it's building on a strength in that part of the market, absolutely.
It is. Right.
And the Denali name has really caught on for you guys. I mean, that's become a serious moneymaker. And there's one in, if I remember correctly, every GMC model has now got a Denali trim level.
Yeah, that's right. And if you use Yukon as an example, 60% of our volume is Denali on the Yukon.
Wow.
So people are seeing the value in what the Denali offers. And it's again, throughout the lineup, as you mentioned, it does really well for us. It's about 20% of our sales overall, if you take into account Terrain and Yukon and Sierra and Acadia. Acadia does about 30, a little over 30% Denali. So it is a great sub-brand, if you want to call it that. I mean, it's interesting. We often talk about the idea that sometimes when you ask people, they say, yeah, I'm a GMC owner. And you ask them, well, what do you drive? They'll say Denali. And you got to give the follow-up question, well, which one? So they even associate themselves with the Denali brand as the most strong, the preeminent thing that they associate with. So,
and one other thing about just the question of dominance, I mean, the brand strategy certainly seems to have paid off here, but you can't take credit away from the fact that it's been great product development. I mean, if you look at the high end, the luxury SUV, think about it. Navigator created that segment, they owned that segment, and GM made them almost completely irrelevant in that segment by just developing a couple of incredibly good Escalades. So, I mean, the engineering, the product development, yeah. Folks, they've been really nailing it.
Yeah, I would echo that. I mean, I'm here as a spokesman, but there's so many talented engineers that are so dedicated to bringing out great cars, whether it's for GM and trucks and crossovers, whether it's for GMC and or Buick, that's what keeps you so encouraged.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, we're at the top of the hour here. It's time to wrap it up. But Roger, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Roger.
I appreciate you having me. It's been fun.
Well, it's always fun to talk about people who are doing really well in the industry, and Buick, like I said at the top of the show, is on fire right now.
Yeah, and for us, that just means go work harder and keep it going.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Satisfy more customers. I mean, that's really what we're trying to do.
And we'll be looking forward to the Riviera.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Duly noted.
And Mark Phelan, thanks so much for coming on, too. Always good to have you on here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
John.
Peter.
Another show.
See you next week.
Yes, we will.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by the 2013 Hyundai Elantra. Learn more at Hyundai.com.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.